Read it tomorrow, see it tonight, or hear it now. 1077 The Pulse.
All right, Bulldog Live with attorney Penny Dean. On Second Amendment Tuesdays here on The Pulse, we have some breaking news regarding the First Amendment in New Hampshire. We'll talk about it next here on The Pulse.
Now, I know the Constitution, and it gives me certain rights that I will never, ever give up, at least not without a fight. So if anybody's even thinking they're gonna take my guns away, like the good old boys down in Gonzales, I got one thing to say. Come on, make my day.
Come and take it if you want it. Come and take it if you think you can. Come and take it, but I warn you, you'll have to pry it from my cold dead hands. We want the freedom that God gave us, so you best not cross that line. If you want this gun, you gotta come through us and take it.
One shot at a time.
All right, this very special edition of Bulldog Live with attorney Penny Dean here on The Pulse. It is special because we have a follow-up to a story that was discussed outside of Second Amendment Tuesdays, but also with the said attorney, whose name appears on a filing in federal district court late last night. It is against the New Hampshire State Police and particularly Trooper James Decker. It appears to me that it is a federal civil rights lawsuit with a trial by jury. Penny, good afternoon and welcome back to Bulldog Live.
Thank you.
All right. Did I state this correct, that there's a federal civil rights lawsuit sitting in United States District Court in Concord?
There is. There
okay.
is. And today is a good day to talk about what's called the rules of evidence and the rules that basically bind lawyers and litigants in cases. Because, of course, everyone wants to know things, and the answer is because we've asked for a jury trial, we can't do what's called pollute the pool. So everyone is going to want to know specifics, and my answer is because there's a jury involved, I can't tell you.
Okay.
And people say, well, wait a minute, why is that? And so I always tell people, all the pleadings in these type of cases are available to the public. Anyone can go look at the pleadings and know what's happening. You can come sit in an open courtroom. And it goes back to how the First Amendment and the Second Amendment are so similar, because what happens is a trial judge, whoever the trial judge who's assigned to this, is essentially what I call the king of the hill in their courtroom. And in those courtrooms, the trial judge decides what a jury can hear. And so a lot of times, you know, people hear about a verdict in a particular case and they go, how in the heck can the jury have decided that?
Right. Well, and we actually ended up talking a little bit about that last week. Let me just add one more detail here for people who know. They say, okay, the lawsuit was filed against Trooper James Decker and New Hampshire State Police. But who filed it? Well, Penny Dean is the attorney for Brian Blackton, who is a freelance photographer in the Concord area, who, as you may recall, and the case spells out what happened on that evening, in August, late August, when there was the fatal accident on Interstate 93 in Canterbury. And long story short, Mr. Blackton had his camera confiscated by the state police. The camera was later returned, and we talked in extensive detail a lot of what had transpired in that time. But he got the camera back minus his digital memory card. So this is a case alleging a violation of his First Amendment rights to freedom of the press, right?
Absolutely, and other civil rights to be free from search and seizure and a variety of other things like that, because, you know, people talk about, you know, the First Amendment and the Second Amendment, but the Fourth Amendment is hugely important. And basically what it does is allow the people, meaning you and I, human beings who live in the United States of America, to be basically free from unreasonable interference or search or seizure of their person, their papers, which means not only your human being, your body walking down the street, but your automobile, your home, your business. In other words, government agents can't just march in there like the Gestapo and say, give me your ledger books, you know, give me this, give me that, or in this particular case, give me your camera. They have to have probable cause or reasonable suspicion. There's all sorts of different standards, different evidentiary standards for different procedures. And so, for example, if they were going to get a search warrant in theory is issued with an affidavit, and an individual, usually a police officer, goes in and signs an affidavit, and they say, you know, that I'm a police officer pursuant to my duties or other things. I have reasonable information to believe, you know, that Johnny Joe is dealing cocaine at 1414 Mockingbird Lane. You know, we have a confidential informant that saw him do that, that saw him take money for a substance that appeared to be cocaine, and I believe there's cocaine located at this residence. And they have a standard, which is what's called a neutral and detached magistrate, which is a person who, hearing these facts, would believe the affiant, the person giving the affidavit, is telling the truth, and they have reason to believe there's cocaine at this address, so they issue a search warrant. Now, a lot of people don't realize that search warrants, for example, are issued what's called daytime or nighttime. Unless they specifically say nighttime warrant, they're presumed to be executed during the day so that you don't get police abuse where they come into your house at midnight. Hmm. And these things are important because, for example, if you're the subject of a search warrant and they're executing it 2 in the morning, the first thing you want to look at is, was this authorized to be a nighttime warrant? And if it isn't, there could be a basis to quash that warrant, or actually the fruits that are seized from the warrant.
Now presumably, the warrant would become part of this case. But at the time that the warrant is being served, you know, meaning the raid on the residence or whatever, the item may be, it could be an office, it could be a car, it could be whatever, the person who owns that property would be given a copy of the warrant at the time?
They absolutely would be. What's supposed to happen is you're supposed to be given a copy of the warrant and a reasonable opportunity to read that. And I always tell people, if you're ever given a warrant, they have what's called no-knock warrants, which are horrible things. They just batter down your door and start tearing the place apart. Uh-huh. But assuming it's that, and that's a subject for another show, but assuming that this is a typical warrant, they give you a copy of it, a physical copy of it. And what I tell people is you should have, I joke about this, but I'm serious, you should have your lawyer's number on speed dial. And you should instantly call, I always tell them, call me right away, start reading it to me, faxing it to me, and I'll get there as quickly as I can. And what I tell people is, that, again, the same thing as if you're being arrested. Never, ever physically resist. You verbally protest every step of the way. Like, let's say that they say you have elephants in your house, and they go opening your refrigerator door. Well, everyone knows an elephant cannot fit inside a refrigerator. Mm-hmm. So what you would say to them is you would verbally protest and say, this warrant authorizes you to search for an elephant. A elephant will not fit in the refrigerator. Do not open my refrigerator door. Do not, you know, I don't allow you to do this.
What if they tell you to shut up?
You want me to tell you what? They're going to get you for disobeying a police officer, but I would continue to verbally protest. I would say, I'm going to continue my verbal protest. If you tell me to shut up, then they're continuing verbal protest because I don't want to be arrested. And at that point, this is an example of where if you have cameras around your house, remember the place in Nashua where they arrested the gentleman?
Well, I do. I remember this case.
Yeah, and so a good example is if you have cameras around your place and signs for audio and video recording, you could actually be recording their search. Now, I wouldn't tell them that because they might try and destroy or stop your cameras. I would just shut up because you have signs in place, and when the time comes, you would retrieve your film, whatever it is, whether it's film or digital media, whatever it is, and be able to say, look, this is how they conducted the search. This is what they did. And the problem is that some of them are very, very aggressive. If you're capable, I always tell people to own those. They cost about $200 anymore, audio and digital video recorders, and literally record them. And what I would say if they told me to stop, I would say, you know what, I shouldn't have to stop because I should be allowed to record what you guys are doing.
In my own home.
And more importantly, if you're not doing anything wrong and you're acting in compliance with a search warrant, why would you have a problem? It would actually protect you.
Mm-hmm.
It would absolutely protect you.
It's kind of like watching Operation Repo and seeing somebody go for a repossession. What are all those cameras doing here? Oh, they're here for my protection.
That's exactly right. And think about it. The honest police officers who are behaving honorably, who are behaving in compliance with a search warrant, they would absolutely do that. They would absolutely do that, and they would have no problem doing that. And they would have no problem having themselves be videotaped. And audiotaped, for that matter. Remember, you have to get consent for audiotaping or have a sign in place. Mm. And that's what I always tell people is audiotaping.
Even though they see the video camera sticking out of your face, it's to they you still need to get their permission for the audio tape.
Well, you do not have to have their permission for audio taping, but what I would say is I am audio and videotaping you.
Okay.
Because remember, you want to get you want to eliminate the chances of, for what I call, throwaway charges.
Okay.
You know, the typical what I call throwaway charges at the end. And the whole
thing. In other words, like, you know, you'll read in the paper, someone was charged with this, 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 and this. And then usually before they even go for the first hearing, three out of the four of those charges were dropped already.
That's exactly right.
Okay.
That's exactly right. And so what you want to do is eliminate them being able to say in the papers, look, this, 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 and this has been charged, because it makes really people look like a bad person. And here's the bottom line. By the time a person's charged, from the time they go to trial, it's usually several months to a year by the time all the discovery's done. And unless you live under a rock, everybody reads the newspaper, everybody watches TV. Maybe not every day, all day. And, you know, invariably the lawyers in voir dire will ask the jurors, have you seen or read about this case? Well, if it was, for example, like...
voir dire being the examination of potential jurors, right?
Absolutely.
Okay.
The examination of potential jurors. Now, what some people like me do, you can ask the judge to ask the jurors certain questions. Now, the trial judge has absolute discretion in his courtroom. And the unfortunate thing is that some judges are, at least in my mind, more inclined to be fairer to the litigant than others are. So, for example, let's say I was trying a self-defense case. One of the things that I always ask the potential jurors, are you a member of Sarah Brady's National Coalition to Ban Handguns? Are you a member of all those type of organizations? Because think about if you're the defendant in a self-defense case and you've been charged with a shooting, let's say, of defending yourself, would you want a person on the jury who thinks it's wrong to own handguns? Yeah, I mean, think about the fairness there. Would you want that person on your jury?
And fair, I think, question, most, yeah.
Most people say absolutely not. Or let's say that they've donated money, let's say, to a Martha Fuller Clark, right?
Okay.
Okay, would you want that person on your jury? She's notoriously anti-firearm.
Gotcha.
Okay, you know what I'm saying? So more than likely, you wouldn't donate money to a person in a campaign that you disagreed with, correct?
Right.
Okay, so let's say that you donated money to, you know, any variety of individuals. I would be concerned about your political viewpoints. And those are reasonable questions to ask a trial judge to say, I would like you to inquire of the jurors, you know, in the panel, meaning to the whole, are you, any of you, a member of this group? Are any of you a member of that group? Do any of you think that people shouldn't own handguns? So, for example, sometimes jurors will raise their hand and say, well, gee, nobody should get to own these things. Well, the bottom line is, in this particular instance, is I say to them all the time, don't you think, you know, that that person should be excluded from the jury for cause? And you go down the list. For example, let's say, you know, when they have different controversial cases, if a person holds an opposing view, there's no chance in most instances that they could be a fair and unbiased juror. Which is what we're entitled to have. You know, when we talk about a jury of our peers, I don't think many of us get truly a jury of peers. You get a cross-section of the community. But a jury of your peers is something differently. For example, a jury of your peers would be radio talk show hosts, correct?
Right. It would be people who engage in the same line of work as me, or perhaps, depending upon what I'm charged with, too,
yep.
Could be, you know, maybe involved in the same recreational activities as me. I don't know.
Absolutely, the same socioeconomic level as you. You know, for example, I've had jury...
live on my road, they have the same types of houses, you know, in the same value range. You know, I wouldn't expect a multimillionaire.
Absolutely. Well, let me give you an example of concerns that at least I, as a trial attorney, have had. I had a case I was trying in Lowell District Court in Massachusetts. Well, as you know, jurors come from that same geographic area. So in Lowell District Court, the jury pool is going to come from the Lowell District Court area in Lowell, Massachusetts, which mm-hmm. tends to be a very economically depressed working class area, correct?
Sure.
Okay. My client was the VP of a multinational corporation. So it was a self-defense case, but I was very, very concerned of how is the jury going to relate to my client who jets off to China twice a year, who jets off to Japan once a month. You know what I'm saying? In other words, who certainly is a well-to-do individual, if not well-to-do, certainly of high corporate status, high education, and that type of thing. And so one of the things that I said, we were very, very fortunate. I was actually quite happy with the jury group. They were very common sense individuals, but occasionally you get the classism or elitism thing where a juror maybe is down and out on their luck and they're thinking, well, he can afford, you know, a high-priced attorney, or he must have done this, or she must have done that. Or by the same token, you have with lower socioeconomic individuals where you have maybe a more affluent white jury and the defendant is maybe of a certain ethnic persuasion. And so those are all things you think about in this type of situation. The other thing that I always tell people in self-defense cases to think about is if you're prudent, here's what I tell people. Firearms are mechanical objects. Mechanical objects break. You've heard of the famous New York-style reload, right?
No.
Okay, you know what that means? You drop your gun and you go for your backup.
Oh, okay.
you go, okay, this one ain't working. We don't know why it's not working, but it ain't working today.
I'm not going to sit there and try and figure this out right now.
Right, but they're shooting at me. Okay, they're shooting at me. And this one isn't working. It's jammed. It's out of commission. I can't clear it. Whatever. You go, this one's gone. Grab your ankle holster. Grab your backup.
Mm-hmm.
Which, to me, that makes perfect sense. And I tell people I got two nail files in my pocket. Why? Because sometimes nail files break or all of a sudden they're dull. Okay? Those are important things to know. Got an extra tube of lipstick with me. I also carry an extra gun because if you need one gun, you might need two guns. And so by the same token, think about it. If I'm ever unfortunate enough as to have to defend my life, okay, I'm in a shooting, I defend my life, they arrest me and process me, and so they're going to count magazines and ammunition and gun. So now, if you get if I'm on what I would believe to be unfairly charged, and you get a prosecutor doing their histrionics, and here's what they're doing: she carried two guns. What does anybody need two guns for? And I tell people to be prepared for that type of thing because you have to.
Kind of like why we have a spare tire on our vehicle. We have four tires on there already. What do you need one more for?
That's what I tell people. But it's one of those things where you're going to have to be able to enunciate and hopefully have an expert witness to explain to the jury that you're not a crazy person looking for a gunfight. You're actually a prudent person saying, okay.
That's why you keep your mouth shut during questioning.
Bingo. Bingo.
Okay, there. I got it. Cool. Penny, let's pause right there, shall we?
We shall.
1-866-823-1077 is our phone number here on Bulldog Live on the Pulse. I'm going to ask Penny a couple more questions regarding this case of Brian Blackton versus New Hampshire State Trooper James Decker, as well as the New Hampshire State Police and a federal civil rights lawsuit filed last night. Attorney Penny Dean representing him as well. And we'll continue our Second Amendment Tuesdays here on Bulldog Live. 1-866-823-1077 here on the Pulse.
Bulldog Live will continue after these messages, live on the Pulse.